Brian, you know, it's difficult. We talked about the Y factor. It's difficult to comprehend one universe. It's even more difficult to comprehend two and to try to figure out why there would be more than one. Where do we go from there?
Well, I think where we go from there is twofold. We have to keep pushing on our mathematical understanding of these possibilities so that we can describe the other universes, if they exist, with enough precision that we can start to make some definite statements, such as these universes would likely have this or that property. These universes would definitely have this or that kind of force in operation. Statements like that would ultimately allow us to then go the next step, which is hopefully to test some of these ideas. I mean, let me give you an example. You might think other universes would necessarily be untestable, unless they, say, collided with us in a manner that we discussed earlier.
Right.
But imagine that you have a very well-developed mathematical multiverse proposal that says something like this. All these universes are out there. They differ in many ways, but they all share the following property. They all have the following collection of particles with these particular features. Well, since we're part of that multiverse, that statement must also apply to us. So how do we test it? We go look for those particles here in our universe. If we don't find them, we rule out that whole multiverse proposal. It's falsifiable. If we find those particles, well, that's one piece of evidence that this theory may in fact be correct. That's how science progresses. But it does require that we understand the mathematics of these theories fantastically well. That's what we're working hard to do now. And ultimately, be able to test some of the ideas that come out of that mathematics. That would be the next step.
You know, I would like to think that also some of these other multiverses would have rectangular planets, square planets, you know, but I don't think they do. I think everything's the same. I think it's pretty uniform.
Well, it's funny that you should give that example, because I'm also working on, with NOVA, we're working on a four-part miniseries, and one of the hours is focusing on the possibility of other universes, and what the artists came up with is exactly what you said. In order to visualize the other universes, they had some rectangular cubic planets, you know, going around a cubic star. And it's not impossible, because anything that would be compatible with the laws of physics could happen. And in principle, that might be compatible with the laws of physics. However unlikely, maybe there would be only very rare universes which would have that property, but it is at least within the realm of possibility.
We talked earlier about the end of the universe, Brian, and, you know, if you got to the end of our universe, would it be like inside of a bubble or a balloon trying to come out? Would you feel that kind of pressure to get through to the other side? Or what's the end like?
Surprisingly, you wouldn't find that. And it's natural that you would think that, especially in the description that we've had, where we are envisioning our universe to be what looks like a bubble, an expanding bubble. But one of the weirdnesses that Albert Einstein figured out with his theories of relativity is that one's perspective of space and time can differ from somebody else's perspective of space and time. And that comes in with a vengeance in these multiverse proposals, and here's why. From the outside, from the bird's eye view of these multiple Big Bang universes, indeed each looks like a bubble that's expanding. But if you are inside one of those bubbles, it turns out that your understanding of space and time differs from the outside perspective, and inside it looks like space goes on infinitely far. There is no edge to the bubble that you could ever encounter. The edge, it turns out, is a moment in time, not a place in space. The only way that you could encounter the edge would be to go back in time, and that's something which we don't think we can do. So surprisingly, inside one of these bubble universes, it would look like space goes on infinitely far, no edge to encounter whatsoever.
Let's go to some calls here, Brian. Nick in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi, Nick. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, George. Thank you.
Sure.
So I had a question about the God particle.
Yep.
The Higgs boson particle, it's called. I thought that there might be, like, different theories for gravity besides, like, having a particle. And you started talking about the dark energy, which is, like, you said some of the farther galaxies are, like, they're actually moving away from us.
Mm-hmm.
So, could gravity be caused by, like, if you had, like, a square box that was the universe and you had a particle right in the center and space and time were expanding, evenly all around that, then that would create, like, a pressure all around it evenly and holding that one atom in the center. But if you put like a second atom at a distance away from that, space-time was expanding evenly, like all around them, except there's less space-time expanding between the two atoms, which forces them to go together.
Sure. But, no, I think I basically understand what you're saying. I think the point that really needs to be emphasized is that it's not that the expansion of space itself creates a force that the particles within that expanding environment feel. It's quite the opposite. We need to put our finger on the force that causes the expansion itself to happen. And that, we do think, comes from gravity. We do think it comes, as I mentioned earlier, from the possibility of gravity being repulsive, something that Isaac Newton in the 1600s would never have thought of. For him, gravity was only attractive. That apple fell from the tree and hit him in the head. That apple did not rush up into space. But nevertheless, our more refined treatment of gravity from Einstein shows that gravity can be repulsive, and it's that force that we think is responsible for the expansion of space. It's not that the expansion of space somehow itself creates a force that particles feel.
What would Isaac Newton do today with a knowledge of mathematics and a computer on his desk?
Oh, boy, that's spectacularly exciting and frightening. I think that when you take an intellect like a Newton and provide him with the modern tools that we have at our disposal and the modern insight that's happened over the past 300 years, I suspect, in short order, he'd revolutionize everything.
You know, as they talk about heaven and hell, Brian, is it possible that what might they might be talking about are these parallel universes that have these different complexities?
You know, I don't think so in any conventional view of what heaven and hell are. Heaven and hell, at least as I have encountered them in the various scriptures, are realms that, in principle, we could migrate to. They're realms that, in principle, we could be forced to enter or that we might joyfully enter. But the other universes that I'm talking about, the ones that I discussed in The Hidden Reality, are generally places that you can't visit. The laws of physics don't allow you to actually traverse the space between the universes, if that's even a well-defined concept. And if it's not, then there's no even sense in which you can jump from one universe to another. So however much there might be a parallel, roughly speaking, between those ancient ideas and these modern ones of parallel universes, I do not think they're the same.